The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
According to new research by CyberSafe Kids, 25% of 8 to 12-year-olds have seen content that bothered them. And one third of schoolboys who play online video games are exposed to harmful content. So what can parents do to deal with these worrying figures? Joining me on the line to give that advice is Stella O'Malley, psychotherapist and author of Bullyproof Kids, and Derek Laffin, researcher with DCU's Anti-Bullying Centre. And Stella, to start with you, will parents listening, is the best advice to them to try to protect their children from seeing this content, or is it now so ubiquitous that you need them to prepare them for when they see it?
Well, I think it's a bit of both, depending on their age. I noticed, like, this survey was for 8 to 12-year-olds. 8 is very young to be saying to somebody, like, get used to it, there's some awful content. But you could certainly let them know that once you see something, it's very hard to unsee it. And that could be, let's say, a car accident on the side of the road or something gory that they will have seen. And you make the point early that, like, when you see something, it stays in the head stronger than reading it. And so be careful what you expose yourself to, because when you go online, you're literally playing adjacent to some really frightening stuff. Like, so it's like a kid these days who's playing online is playing adjacent to gang warfare in the next street and the red light district in the other street, and they can wander into it. And so you have to explain to the kids, basically you have to teach your children online etiquette and know that sometimes you can wander in somewhere and you'll think, I wish I wasn't here, wish I didn't see it, get out quickly. We adults know this and we've learned it, and we have to teach it to the kids. Just like we taught them lots of different things about life, about how to cross a road, they need to learn where are the dangers and how they can just, you can fall into it online. And that's why we have to really monitor the kids' content.
And I assume, Stella, it's not just that you can fall in, but that other kids may decide to say, here, come here, wait till I show you what I have seen. Very difficult for a child in that context to say, no, no, I don't want to look.
Yeah, it's really, really difficult. And that's our job, to make sure that we kind of, A, equip them that they know there's going to be stuff there that they shouldn't see, and B, that we monitor it and we're all over it so that they bow to their children's views. Like, they can bow to their parents' views on it, as in, my mammy has got parental control, so I couldn't open that. And, you know, those parental controls really help cut a lot of fights. I'm not saying, I know people immediately text and say, the children are geniuses and they can all oversee them. They can't all oversee these controls. Certainly 8, 9, 10, 11, usually parental controls really get rid of a lot of content and make sure they manage some sort of level of sanity in their online content with the parental control. So I really do recommend using them.
Now, that, of course, is exposure to content that they may stumble across or be shown by other kids. The other issue, of course, is being mistreated online. And Derek Laffin with the DCU's Anti-Bullying Centre, one of the anecdotes told in the research done by CyberSafe Kids is a mother describing her son being subject to the most horrendous physical threats of egregious violence in the most offensive, as she described it, stomach-turning language. What do you do to protect kids against that?
I mean, I'm kind of just echoing some of what Stella had to say about parental controls. And one of the striking things about the report was that I was interested in to know that a massive amount of kids were actually had a report that they can do whatever they want online or go wherever they want to go online. And I have to say, I mean, even from an actual point of view of involving the parents, actually, you know, if they actually are involved in the game itself or actually have some form of knowledge of what the game is going on, you know, prior to understanding that, they can prevent some of that and put that into context if it goes. But we would always say in the Anti-Bullying Centre that when you come across hate content or any form of content that actually is upsetting or abusive in nature, do report it. You know what I mean? Do actually document evidence that it happened. Like, you can screenshot this and you can put it into a bank of a kind of evidence that you have to be able to say, look, that happened to me. I've seen that, or I've seen that happen to others, and I can report it and block it. And these games do actually have controls in them, let alone just being online and having that kind of, you know what I mean, education to be able to do it and spot it. But like, these games do have those controls within them themselves to be able to control who you play with and how it goes. So my advice to a parent like that is, actually, you see that, you don't let it go. You actually take that, you report it. And if that isn't the case, you do report it to the Gardaí. If action isn't followed up in the school, if that goes into the school environment, you know, you're reporting it to them, but also to the Ombudsman for Children if it has to go that far.
Although we're only a day from seeing a tech giant fined nearly €500 million for how they performed in relation to child protection. So it begs the question, how responsive, Derek, are they when they get these kind of complaints, whether it be a game designer or whether it be a tech giant?
Well, you can't. It's something you can never. I mean, like, not only that, no, the research even tells that kids themselves, when they report, they don't even trust that it's going to be dealt with, let alone whether they actually act on it or not. So it's very important to have other measures in place. So parental controls, as Stella was saying, is actually one of those ways that, you know, parents can get involved and actually, well, actually, here's what you should and shouldn't do, or here's what I think we should put a control on, or here's what I want you to talk to me about. And they can be loosened up as the ages get older. But also, what you might foster is actually a good conversation about the games prior to even having those, you know, these things happening. So if they're playing games from the age of 8, and this actually is not completely unknown to us either, we know that as soon as kids get their hands on devices, they want to play online games. We know that when they tend to have ownership of these devices about 10 years of age, and all they want to do is play games with their friends. But I mean, if we open up that conversation at home, kind of like, what are you playing today? You know, what, tell us what the game's about. And it's about some orc doing this, or it's about some, you know, driving thing around. I mean, that conversation just opens up healthy conversations about gaming experiences later on. And then you start having a bit more honest conversations about how it goes. They open up to their own personal experiences that happen in games. And then those choices within the house, within the context of the family and the kid, become more easier to assess and deal with.
Which is all great, Derek, if it is their own device and you can either set the parental controls or you're aware of what they're gaming on it. But kids must share devices between each other. Do you always have control of what they get access to?
No, you won't always have that control away it goes. But again, we're talking in this report, we're talking about very young ages where typically they would have the devices that are controlled with them. Like, I mean, normally before, like their age of 8, normally you see a household with like a house tablet, or maybe they have a house computer, or maybe they're using their parents' devices. So ownership of actually devices becomes a little bit later on, between about 10 and 12 as it goes on. But if they are sharing devices and going out, I mean, it's just you are up to be able to have, you know, confidence in the knowledge that you are telling kids to actually have digital literacy and have those digital skills to deal with that as it goes, and that knowing that they can actually actively report and actually bring that kind of experience into the household, that it's a welcoming environment to say, I saw that today, and how I dealt with it was this way. I actually reported it, I blocked, I took a screenshot of it, here it is, and I can deal with it going. So we do have to put some form of, like, you know, early intervention or early kind of literacy skills in, that we are confident that young people are able to deal with them if and when they happen.
On that topic of early intervention, Stella O'Malley, for parents who have to deal with bullying, it's one thing to deal with the bullying when you are clear what it is and that it is happening. But what are the early warning signs that parents should be live to let them get a sense if bullying is going on?
Yeah, it's a very good question. A good signal is the way the child is talking about themselves, if you follow me. So if the child is suddenly coming out with, oh, I'm useless, or I hate myself, or I'm doing it all wrong, and their self-talk is very harsh, it's kind of a sign that it's coming from somewhere, a kind of a negative outlook towards them. And that would prick my ears up very, very quickly. Like, why have they got negative self-talk when you've given them lots of positive self-talk? It's come from somewhere. And so that would be a quick sign. Also, you know, the traditional kind of signals were things like, you know, writing on the school bag, lost lunch boxes and things like that. I think actually a furtiveness around the online content would be something that would be kind of, you'd need to watch out for. It's like, why are they being furtive? Often people, all of us, not just children, are utterly ashamed that they've been ostracized or bullied. They feel in some way to blame. It's something about public shaming. It triggers this sense of shame in us, and we want to hide it. And so they can be very hidden suddenly, and you're thinking they're speaking meanly about themselves, and they're hiding in a furtive kind of way. That would be a really kind of a 1-2 of something's going down and I need to have a chat. I really liked what Derek was saying, is you chat with the child about what's going on online, just like you would chat with them about what's going on in school, just what's going on each day, like what were you playing? And frankly, it is boring. I am a gamer, so it does kind of go on a bit. But it's worth having those conversations because you're building up a natural communication about the online world, rather than this idea of online is your thing. I'll just ask you about school and sports. It's very important that parents enter into the online conversation by asking them what they're doing and what's going on.
Even if it means 5 minutes of detailed explanations of a game.
Sadly, yes.
I suppose it's a small price to pay in the big scheme of things, Stella. Stella O'Malley, psychotherapist and author of Bullyproof Kids, and Derek Laffin, researcher with the DCU Anti-Bullying Centre. Thank you both very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.